Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit the webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Social Security when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A six-pack of beer, 43% tax, and a fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that the government does to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the guy in the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that he has to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit and eat it? Why is it the government gets paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that you and I buy? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for the free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and Status now is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? All right, we've been talking about Social Security. And last time, we were taking a look at some letters that came from the Social Security Administration. The admissions and the court rulings that have come down concerning Social Security show us that it's voluntary. Nobody is compelled to join it. In fact, it's the thing that makes you a taxpayer, just like joining the Army. You know, joining the Army is voluntary. But once you sign that enlistment contract, what goes on from then on is mandatory. Well, joining the tax system is voluntary, but once you've joined, what goes on from then on is mandatory. Now, people will call and complain about this income tax and how government is encroaching upon their rights. I showed you last time. You did that to yourself. You volunteered for the income tax. You did that when you got your Social Security account. Social Security is a retirement program, but it's more than just a retirement program. It's the contract that signs you up for the tax system, puts you into commerce so that you can participate in trade, commerce, business, and industry with corporate America. You want to practice the Commerce Clause in Article 1, Section 8, well, that's the way to do it. Get a Social Security number or a taxpayer identification number, go open a checking account at the bank, and you're in commerce. Now, Thomas Jefferson had something to say about corporations and commerce. He said, "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. Already, the banking industry, has raised up a moneyed aristocracy that has set the government at defiance. The issuing power of money should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it belongs." And Jefferson also said that if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent that their fathers conquered. Well, that's already occurred. Now what you see is the moneyed powers, that is the corporations, in a fascist America, exporting your jobs overseas and importing slave labor from Mexico to take your jobs here in the United States. And every one of those Mexicans that comes across the border, they sit there and say, well, those poor people deserve a job, and they just work for minimum wage. Oh, that's poppycock. Poppycock. Those Mexicans are working in construction for half what American construction workers get. And every time a Mexican comes across the border and takes a job over here, it drives the price of wages down. Now, I'm not here to tell you that you should stop immigration to the United States. I mean, my goodness, you people are free, white, and 21. You know, you got a right to choose. You got a right to determine for yourself who you want to elect and put into office and what institutions you want to follow or you want to continue. But my contention is that many of these decisions that we've been making over the last 50 to 75 years aren't in Americans or America's best interest. It's in the interest of China. It's in the interest of Mexico. It's in the good interest of Indonesia and Pakistan and India. And I don't deny that. But is it in your best interest? Free trade, what has that done for you? And what have these corporations and corporate America given you? An income tax and Social Security? Now, Jefferson went on to say, he said, "I hope we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of the moneyed corporations which dare already to challenge our government to trial of strength and bid defiance to the laws of our country." That was from a letter that Jefferson wrote to George Logan in November of 1816. Jefferson wasn't ignorant about corporations and corporate power. The corporations give more money to your lobbyists, and the lobbyists in turn give the money to the politicians, who in turn are beholden then to the corporations that gave them the money. That's re-election money, campaign contributions. The Bible calls it bribery. We call it campaign contributions here in the United States. So there's some famous quotations, one from Thomas Jefferson. Now, in a book titled Jefferson on Corporations, Jefferson Corporations, the Constitution by Dr. Charles A. Beard, written in 1936. Let me give you a couple of quotations about what happens when corporations and corporate America take over your political process. They give you all kinds of neat social programs, like Social Security and unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, and free education for all children in public schools. Now, our founding fathers weren't as smart as Franklin D. Roosevelt, who gave us Social Security. And there, you know, our corporations and our public officials today are smarter, more intelligent people than God or Moses, who failed to give us public education in our Constitution or in the Bible. They gave us private education. You have to be individually responsible for every one of those children that you create and produce. You got to educate them, feed them, clothe them, and house them. We don't want to do that. We need a babysitter like public schools, and we want aid to families with dependent children, and we want all these social programs, and we want a school system so that we can have a babysitter take care of our children, educate them for us, because we don't want to do that. We're busy. You know, we created the Federal Reserve back in 1913 so that we could deposit our money in the bank, so that we could pay our bills by mail. It's convenient, but it raises up a corporation that has power, and this power, this political power created by these corporations, whether they be banks or General Motors or automobiles or Microsoft or anybody else, they create monopolies, and these monopolies are in business to make money. And they make money at the expense of individuals and individual liberty. So Charles Beard, back in 1936, described the circumstances going on in the Great Depression. Listen to this story here, and let's see if anything's changed. He said, under the dual system of equal rights for natural persons and for corporate persons, American economy has passed over the long road from the days of the fathers to the latest hour. For readers of this journal, it is not necessary to describe even briefly the present situation. They are familiar with such surveys of contemporary economy as may be found in Burl and Means, the modern corporation and private property. Nearly 80% of the business wealth of the nation is concentrated in the hands of corporations, and about 49% of the corporate wealth and 38% of the business wealth is in the hands of 200 corporations in a nation of about 120 million natural persons. 120 million people back in 1936. We're at about 300 million today. Now listen to this. In 1936, nearly 80% of the business wealth of the nation was concentrated in the hands of corporations. Did you get that? That's pretty significant. 80% of all the business wealth in the nation is in the hands of corporations. And about 49%, now that's half of the corporate wealth, is in the hands of 200 corporations. Half the business wealth is in the hands of 200 corporations. Now wait a minute. That's pretty powerful, wouldn't you say? Let's take a look at Fortune 500 today. You know, you take a look at these Fortune 500 companies, and ask yourself, is the concentration of wealth in America today greater or lesser than it was in 1936? What do you think? Is the situation getting better, or is it getting worse? Is it degenerating? And as this corporate wealth gets more and more politically powerful, then individual political power decreases. That's what we had in Mussolini's fascist Italy and Hitler's nationalist Germany. That's what we have in America's corporate America. But there's more to the story. America is not a nation back in 1936. America, he said, is not a nation of homeowning and independent farmers as envisioned by Jefferson. It is mainly a nation of industrial workers, white-collar employees, debt-burdened farmers, tenant sharecroppers, and casual laborers. Anything changed? Isn't America today a nation of industrial workers, white-collar employees, debt-burdened farmers, tenant sharecroppers, and casual laborers? He said the opportunity for natural persons to acquire physical property, manage that property, operate that property, and then enjoy the fruits of that property and security has materially declined. The household arts which enabled farmers and their wives to guarantee security to themselves have practically vanished. Nearly all of the owners of small properties such as stores, garages, gasoline stands, and pants-pressing establishments are pitifully dependent for survival, to say nothing of a living, upon the general state of the economy of the nation. And finally, it is to be noted that the old days when America furnished vast quantities of raw materials and farm produce to the developing capitalism of Europe have now passed. The whole balance of world economy has shifted since 1787, and indeed since 1890. Hence, even corporate enterprise finds itself hampered, blocked, and harassed in the quest for markets, domestic and foreign, in which to sell the flooding output of its vast technology. Surely none will deny the immensity of this transformation in the economy in which natural persons are to enjoy the natural rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And surely none will deny the disparity between individual natural persons and individual corporate persons in wealth, economic power, and political influence. If the corporate person is to enjoy all of the rights of natural persons, then the dice of fortune are loaded on its side. If corporations cannot provide employment for the millions of the American proletariat, for such we have, in spite of all of the claptrap to the contrary, can corporate persons expect to protect themselves forever through constitutional and judicial processes against the distresses and distempers of natural persons twisting and turning in their search for the rights to life, liberty, and property declared in the American Constitution? What a story for 1936, and it's mirrored today in 2005. I said, this is no strange doctrine for American ears. Jefferson knew full well that nations are not immortal, and that governments are transient, that concentrated wealth and widespread poverty cannot forever endure side by side in a democracy. Madison was equally well acquainted with the long story of mankind, and he also warned his countrymen of perils to come. In the Constitutional Convention of August 7, 1787, Madison said, in future times, a great majority of the people will not only be without landed, but without any other sort of property. Same words that Jefferson used. Our founding fathers understood, and they understood full well, that if corporations never begin to take over the political influence in the nation, they will reduce the nation to a political slave state. And that's where we are today. Social Security is a symptom. It's not a cause. Social Security is a symptom that has been foisted upon us by corporate America. They've reduced Americans to being cogs in vast machines. You know, you work at General Motors, and as the car goes by, you put the right front tire on. That's your job. That's your career. You do these tasks for corporate America. Now corporate America finds that they can have that car assembled in Mexico a lot cheaper than they can in Flint, Michigan. So they outsource those jobs to Mexico or China or Indonesia or someplace else. They don't care anything about Americans. They don't have any loyalty to you or me or anybody else. They have a loyalty to the shareholders of the corporation. It's an institution. It's a business. It's nothing personal. I mean, if you'd work for 11 cents an hour, we wouldn't have a problem hiring you. That's why I'm so opposed to this thing of public business. Public business has never been a benefit. Free trade has never been a benefit to Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. It's a great benefit to shareholders. It's a great benefit to corporate America. I don't deny that, but it's not of any benefit to you or me. Now, it creates a thing called a guardian-ward relationship. And our Supreme Court, in fact, our legal system has a lot to say about this thing of a guardian-ward relationship. If you want to be a ward, you just check yourself into a mental hospital. Just walk up to the mental hospital and tell them, hey, I'm not feeling too good today. You got an application, they'll give you a form, fill it out and sign it. You can check yourself into the mental hospital. Now, let's suppose you're there for a couple of weeks and you're starting to feel a little better. So you say, hey, listen, I'm feeling pretty good, I want to leave here now. I checked in, now I want to check out. Many people believe the government works the same way. You know, we just check in, and then when we get tired of it, we'll just check out. Well, no, that isn't the way that game is played. When you check into a mental hospital, you have to be released. You don't just check out. This isn't the Holiday Inn. You don't check in and check out. When you check in, it's like the Army. We'll tell you when it's time for you to leave. We'll give you permission to leave. And while you're here, we'll tell you when to get up, when to go to bed, and what to do in between. Many times I think people have it in their minds that government works more like the Holiday Inn than the Army. So they check into Social Security and they say, well, gee, you know, when I get tired of this or if I don't like it, I'll just check out. It's like buying an insurance policy. If I don't like it, I'll stop making the payments and I'll just terminate it. Some things in life don't get terminated. Some things in life are forever. Now, there's a thing called a guardian-ward relationship. We should all be familiar with this guardian-ward relationship. It's explained to us in American jurisprudence. That's a legal encyclopedia. And in a legal encyclopedia, they tell us how the law works, and then they show us the footnotes and cite the cases in which the story comes from time to time here on the Law Hour. You'll hear me cite a case. When I make a statement, I say, well, it comes from this case. That's called case precedent. That's what everybody goes by. So when the Supreme Court makes a decision in a case like Miranda versus Arizona, all the police in the country follow that precedent, and they read you your rights. They say, here, let me read you your rights. You have a right to remain silent. You have a right to an attorney. And they give you this little spiel. It comes from that case precedent. So let me explain to you what a guardian-ward relationship is. And Social Security is a guardian-ward relationship. And when you have a Social Security account number, you're a mental patient in a mental hospital in a guardian-ward relationship in which you're the ward and the United States government is your guardian. Now, that's a renvoi on reality. You see, the theory of American government is that the people are sovereign and that the public officials are servants. That's the theory of government. It'd be like you having a butler, a cook, and a chauffeur. The theory behind that is that you're the master, you pay their wages. They are your servants. You are the superior, they are the inferior. Now let's suppose your butler comes up to you one day and he says, Master, Master, I've got a new idea. Why don't you give me your power of attorney, and I will take your checking account, and I will pay your bills for you. Think about this now. You're the master, and your butler comes up and he says, Master, let me ease the burden. I can see how hard you work. I can see how much time you spend. And I could do this job for you. It's not that big a deal. I could take your checkbook and I could pay all of your bills. And that would give you more time, you know, to watch pornography on television to chase wild women. So in 1913, we gave that power to our servants, the government. And we said, why don't you create this private bank? Why don't you give our public checkbook over to these bankers? Why don't you give our money, power of attorney, over to the Federal Reserve bankers? So that they can take care of your banking for you. Give you more time, you Americans, to go out here and chase wild women. So we did that. We created a guardian-ward relationship. We gave that power over to our butler. What if your cook came to you and he said, look, let me take a portion of your money, Master, and let me plan your retirement for you. And in that way, you won't have to take up so much of your valuable time from, you know, your wild parties and gambling down at the casino. Don't burden yourself, Master, with preparing for the future. Let me prepare your future for you. You're much, much too important and much, much too busy to be burdened with routine, mundane things like preparing for your old age and retirement and education for your children and so on. So just give me your power of attorney. So we did that. We did that. It's called Social Security. We gave that planning power that we as individuals had all of our national life from 1787 to 1935, we gave it over to our servants, the public servants, the politicians, the government. Somehow or another, our cook came in and convinced us that we were no longer competent or capable of doing that, and that our cook, of all people, could do this more efficiently, do it better for us. What would you think if I said, well, give me your power of attorney, Master, so that I can educate your children? What if your chauffeur came in to you and said, hey, look, I see you in here educating your children constantly, spending much of your valuable time over here, you know, reading and writing and arithmetic and all this and that and other thing, you know, trying to educate your children over here. Why don't you give me your power of attorney? Why don't you send your children to me, your chauffeur? I've got lots of time, you know, when I'm not driving for you, I'm just standing around polishing the car, and I could do this for you because I've got the time to do it. And you don't have to take your valuable time, Master. And your chauffeur says, listen, I will replace the Bible with science and the Ten Commandments with the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, and I'll educate your children over here in free education for all children in public school. So we gave over our finances to government. We gave over our planning, our future to government. We gave over our education to government. And now we've reduced ourselves to wards of our cook, butler, and chauffeur. And now, instead of our public officials being our servants, they have now become our masters with a guardian-ward relationship. Here's how this works. A guardianship is a trust relation of the most sacred character, in which one person called a guardian acts for another called the ward, whom the law regards as incapable of managing his own affairs. A curator is a guardian appointed by the court to control property of a minor. He is not a guardian of the person, and in some jurisdictions, a conservator may be appointed. He has the same powers and obligations as a guardian so far as they relate to the property of the ward, so that in effect, he is a guardian of the estate. Government now has guardianship of our estate. Government tells you that when you go to work, you have to wear hard hats and steel-toed shoes and safety glasses. And when I mentioned this, some guy said to me, well, those are just good common sense things. Well, our government should tell us to buckle our seat belts and wear hard hats and steel-toed shoes and safety goggles. Excuse me? Excuse me? You mean to tell me that your chauffeur should educate your children? You mean to tell me that your butler should tell you how you should dress? Excuse me? Are you really serious when you say that your cook should direct your financial affairs? You know, boys and girls, when you get to the point when you can no longer handle your own affairs and you have to have your chauffeur, your cook, and your butler manage these affairs for you, then it's obvious that you're incompetent. And when you become incompetent, you become a ward. You sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. Now, that's exactly what your government is telling you to do today. That's why the highway patrolman comes out there and gives you a ticket and punishes you in front of a judge, takes you before a judge, who punishes you for not buckling your seatbelt. Maybe it is a good thing for you to buckle your seatbelt, but who should decide whether or not you buckle your seatbelt? You, the master, or your chauffeur? I mean, who in the hell's in charge here? You or the chauffeur? Now, if your chauffeur is in charge, well, sit down, shut up, and buckle your seatbelt. Americans used to be in charge. Americans used to be the masters. Americans used to be the sovereigns. Today, it's your politicians. Today, it's your highway patrolmen. Today, it's your OSHA and EPA inspectors. Your IRS and fellow, you know, comes along and says, open your records and books. I'm going to inspect them. What? What would you think if your chauffeur came up to you and said, Master, open your records and books so that I can see whether or not you're cheating on your income tax? Your butler comes in and says, Master, open your records and books. I'm going to inspect it. I'm going to audit your records to see if you've paid all of your bills on time. Boys and girls, that's a guardian-ward relationship. Now, the purpose of statutes relating to guardianship is to safeguard the rights and interests of minors and incompetent persons. So when you have statutes that tell you that you have to wear a hard hat and steel-toed shoes and buckle your seat belts, those are statutes that are aimed at incompetent persons. Now, you know, I don't want to tell you that you're competent when you're not. You know, most of you people listening to me are probably pretty incompetent people. And you need a driver's license, and you need a guardian out on the highway to tell you how to drive, tell you to slow down, because you're not responsible for your actions. Most of you have insurance, and everybody that has insurance is obviously incompetent, irresponsible, unable to be responsible for his own accidents, his own damages. And so you have to hire somebody. Well, then the insurance company comes along, goes to the politicians, and say, these people are incompetent. We're the guardians of these incompetents out here on the highway, and we need laws, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices. We got to have enforcement. And they do. Everybody with a driver's license is demonstrating prima facie evidence of a guardian-ward relationship of an incompetent to a superior. The state is superior, and you are incompetent. It wasn't always like that. You know, your great-great-granddaddy got on his Conestoga wagon out in St. Louis, navigated it all the way out to the Willamette Valley of Oregon, fought Indians on the way out there without a driver's license, registration, or proof of insurance. I know it's a wild new concept. You probably have never heard this before. But those people were competent, and they were not wards. They were masters. Well, then how did Americans degenerate into wards of the state? What happened here? Now, there's a thing called a conservator here. And in several states, statutes authorize a person who, although of sound mind, I mean, you can be of sound mind, but when you believe that you're incapable of managing your own estate or of caring for your own property, you may apply for, you may request, or you may simply consent to the appointment of a conservator or a guardian of your estate or of your person or both. And when this person is appointed, he possesses over the estate substantially the same powers and is subject in regard thereto to substantially the same duties as a guardian of an incompetent. Let's take a look at one. Let's suppose that you're a pregnant female. And one day you wake up and you say, gee, I'm going to have a baby. Well, I need to go to a pediatrician. So you go to a pediatrician, and he gives you a form to fill out, and you sign that form, and he becomes your guardian. It's obvious that you're medically incompetent and unable to handle this pregnancy of and by yourself. My grandmother, in 1903, had a baby by herself out in the mountains. You probably heard me mention this, my Aunt Bessie. And she already had two little children. Lyle was four. He was born in 1899. This was 03. He was born in 99, so Lyle was four. Lloyd was two, and my Aunt Bessie was born, 1903. She was there by herself. She delivered the baby, cleaned it up, cleaned herself up. About 2 o'clock in the afternoon, baby was born. By 6 o'clock that night, 6 o'clock, that's 4 hours after the baby is born, she put dinner on the table for the children. And she was stuck up there for 6 weeks by herself in the mountains, snowed in. They couldn't get up there to her. And by the time they got there, all she had left, she said, was cornmeal. They were eating cornmeal. That's it. Just boiled cornmeal. Now, that was a pretty competent woman. She didn't need a pediatrician. She didn't need a hospital. But, you know, the pediatrician says, well, we got to put you in the hospital. This is a medical emergency, having babies. It isn't a normal bodily function. It's a medical emergency. And so you have to sign into the hospital. This creates another guardian-ward relationship with the hospital in which you agree to pay all of these bills. You can't pay these bills, so you have insurance. So you have another guardian called the insurance company who's going to pay your bill at the hospital because you can't pay it. You can't manage your money. And then some nurse comes in there and says, now, listen, you incompetent woman, here's a birth certificate, sign this, and give your baby to the state. That's what birth registration is. You give your baby to the state because you're unable to take care of this child, manage it, own it. And in the meantime, you get a Social Security number, and so they put this in front of you, and you sign the birth registration, you sign the Social Security for the baby, and you sign into the hospital, and you sign on to the doctor, the pediatrician. These are all guardian-ward relationships of incompetent people who cannot manage their own affairs. Now, isn't that just real special? Well, not too long ago, a guy got a prosecution, I guess we'll call it. He was prosecuted for making a machine gun. I want to show you something here about constitutional rights as opposed to these privileges and franchises. But before we do that, let me give you a message. I'll give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly and it has a radio log schedule and archives. You can access those archives through the website at georgegordon.org. Just go to georgegordon.org, pull up the archives, and you can copy these programs, 16 and 32-bit. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. For more information, you can call the law school and order the free 4-hour CD introductory package. That's 417-273-4967, area code 417-273-4967. Remember that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. And again, for more information, go to the Law Hour. That's the Law Hour and Editorial Review website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Now, on the other side of this thing of the guardian-ward relationship, there are rights. Rights are attended by duties. You want rights? There are responsibilities that go along with them. So, the guy gets prosecuted here. Here's a release. The Federal Appeals Court, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, Thursday overturned a Mesa, Arizona man's federal conviction of possessing 5 machine guns. This guy was arrested because he had 5 machine guns. A 3-judge panel of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals of San Francisco reversed the conviction, ruling that the congressional ban does not apply to homemade machine guns and their parts because they were never in the stream of commerce. Never in the stream of commerce. You see, you've got a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. You don't have a Second Amendment right to keep and bear commercial arms. That's the difference. So if you have a gun manufactured 1898 or before, or if you manufacture your own gun, well, you can do that all day long. And these are fully automatic. Fully automatic. Now, if you'd like to have a fully automatic Uzi or Thompson submachine gun, you can do that. You just need a federal tax stamp. Last time I heard, they were $235, and you get it from the IRS. Just get down to your local IRS office and tell them, hey, listen, I want to pack heat, fully automatic heat. Here's my $235. Sign me up. If you'll pay that commercial tax, you too can have a fully automatic submachine gun. Now, if you don't want to pay that tax, then make your own. But you see, if you buy one of these, it's going to have commerce attached to it. And if you're going to deal in commerce, then you're going to have a guardian. Guardian-ward relationships apply to commerce. Commerce. Guardian-ward relationships apply under Hale versus Hinkle to corporations. Individuals have rights. Corporations don't. So if you want to participate in commerce, then it's the prima facie evidence that it's a guardian-ward relationship. Corporations operate in a guardian-ward relationship. The legislature is their guardian. The legislature makes their laws. So you can follow, you can have God Almighty, the creator of the universe, make your laws, and you can follow those laws, and that's called private business, or you can have public business under the Commerce Clause and have the legislature and Dianne Feinstein and Ted Kennedy make your laws. It's a choice that you make. And then when you make that choice, there are side effects that come from it. There are taxes that are due. Well, the court ruled that there was neither a transfer nor sale of the weapons or their parts, so Congress did not have the power under the Commerce Clause to regulate homemade guns crafted from scratch. Robert Stewart was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment for being a felon in possession of firearms and of possessing illegal machine guns last year. His attorney, Thomas Hania Phoenix, said that the decision doesn't mean much for his clients or for the gun movement. Few people have the skills to build a weapon from scratch, as Stewart did. Well, wait a minute. You could go out here and have Stewart make a gun for you, pay him in gold coin, in a private contract protected at Article 1, Section 10. Government is prohibited from impairing the obligation of your contracts. Why don't you keep it out of commerce, boys and girls? That's private business. That's thou shalt not steal. I know this is kind of wild and new, but I didn't write this. You know, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals over here takes a guy that's got a machine gun. I mean, everybody's in agreement that this is a fully automatic machine gun. This guy made it in his own machine shop. He's a machinist. Government came in here, I guess it was BATF, and said, no, wait a minute, you can't do that. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals says, oh, yeah, you can do that. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with a guy having his own machine gun? Again, commerce, boys and girls, commerce. I didn't make it that way, I'm just reporting. Here's another little part of the story. When we're talking about commerce and rights and constitutional rights and guardian-ward relationship over here, and this is a case called Almeida Sanchez. I think it's U.S. versus Almeida Sanchez, cited at 413 U.S. 270. 413 U.S. Wait a minute. Maybe it's 413 U.S. 266. Yeah, it'd be right there in that neighborhood. I'm looking off of one page here. Almeida Sanchez versus United States is the title of it. 413 U.S., and I'm looking at page number 270, but here's the caption, says 266. So I think the case begins on page 266. But on page 270 and page 271, listen to this. In seeking a rationale for the validity of the search in this case. All right, now this is a search case. This is a Fourth Amendment search. I'll give you a little background here. This guy, Almeida Sanchez, is a Mexican national with a green card, 30 miles north of the Mexican border, traveling on an east-west highway in Southern California, hauling a load of marijuana. He's got a pickup load of marijuana. And as he's driving down the road, he goes through an intersection, and in this intersection, there are two Border Patrol officers. These Border Patrol officers are where they're supposed to be, guarding America, protecting the border, looking for criminals. There's lights, and this is 3 o'clock in the morning, and there are lights. And one Border Patrol agent, as he watches Almeida Sanchez drive by, says, "Hey, look at that. That's a Mexican driving that pickup at 3 o'clock in the morning." Therefore, a Mexican driving a pickup at 3 o'clock in the morning must be in some kind of criminal activity. So they went out and they stopped him, searched him, and found all this marijuana. They were right. They were right. Now, the Supreme Court took a look at this case and said, well, there's only 30 million Mexicans that live down here, only 30 million American-Mexican citizens that live down here. And as a result, stopping Almeida Sanchez requires a thing called probable cause. Probable cause, they required. And did these agents have probable cause to believe that Almeida Sanchez was breaking the law or that in some way he was in violation, that he had triggered probable cause? So the court said, in seeking a rationale for the validity of the search in this case, the government thus understandably sidesteps the automobile search cases, and instead the government relies heavily on cases dealing with administrative inspections. Administrative inspections rather than automobile search cases. But these cases fail to support the constitutionality of this search. In Camera versus Municipal Court, the court held that administrative inspections to enforce community health and welfare regulations could be made on less than probable cause to believe that particular dwellings were the sites of particular violations. And yet the court insisted that the inspector obtain either consent or a warrant supported by particular physical and demographic characteristics of the area to be searched. Now, the search in this present case was conducted in the unfettered discretion of the members of the Border Patrol, who did not have a warrant, who did not have probable cause, and did not have consent. This search thus embodies precisely the evil the court saw in Camera when it insisted that the discretion of the official in the field be circumscribed by obtaining a warrant prior to the inspection. Now, two other administrative inspection cases relied upon by the government are equally in opposite, Colonnade Catering Corporation versus United States and United States versus Biswell. Both of these cases approved warrantless inspections of commercial enterprises, I underline commercial enterprises, engaged in businesses closely regulated and licensed by the government. In Colonnade Catering, the court stressed the long history of federal regulation and taxation of the manufacture and sale of liquor. In Biswell, the court noted the pervasive system of regulation and reporting that is imposed upon licensed gun dealers. A central difference, however, between those cases, Colonnade Catering and Biswell versus United States, and this case, Almeida Sanchez versus United States, is that businessmen who are engaged in such federally licensed and regulated enterprises accept the burdens as well as the benefits of their trade. Whereas the petitioner here was not engaged in any regulated or licensed business. The businessman in a regulated industry, in effect, consents to the restrictions placed upon him. Almeida Sanchez was not licensed to haul marijuana. He was in a private business. His constitutional rights are intact. Can't come out there and stop him and search him without probable cause. Is that going to wake you up, boys and girls? Can you smell the coffee? Commerce. 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 Always remember the Commerce Clause, Article 1, Section 8. If you're going to engage in commerce, you're going to be regulated and controlled. You're going into a master-servant relationship. This is a guardian-ward enterprise. You want to do business with an insurance company? That's commerce. You want to do business with a bank? That's commerce. You want to do business with government? That's commerce. You want to do private business? That's the Ten Commandments. You want to do private business? That's contract. You want to do private business? That's gold and silver. There's a way to do private business and there's a way to do public business. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, but don't sit here and bitch about government now because the government's out here doing what governments do. Now, the government sends you to public school and educates you to become a public businessman. It's in the best interest of government. Why would government want to train and teach you to be a private businessman when they can't tax you? Can't make any money off of you. You know, governments aren't stupid. Governments are in business to make money. Politicians are in business to make money. And they do. And they did. And they are. Now, when we're talking about labor and business and so on, you know that there's laws that regulate labor and labor relations. Law regulates everything that we do. That's why I always say that law is the most important endeavor that you can learn about. It's more important than Playboy and Bunny. It's more important than television and pornography. It's more important than parties and driver's license. Law governs everything that we do. It governs us from the time we get up in the morning until we go to bed at night. There isn't anything that some law doesn't regulate or control. The entire universe is based upon law. The law of gravity governs you every minute of every day. You know, we have natural law, and then we have these artificial laws, man-made laws. You know, man comes along and he makes a seatbelt law, and that seatbelt law is there for a reason, and it governs people for a purpose. Nobody came up with the seatbelt law because they were stupid. You may not like it or you may love it. It doesn't make any difference. That law has a purpose. It's there for a reason. It was created for a reason. It's not there for no good reason. Let's take a look here at labor and labor relations. In labor laws, the term labor may be used in a comprehensive sense as including those who toil with their brains as well as those performing manual work. And there's a constitutional protection of your right to work. The right to labor and to its protection from unlawful interference is a constitutional as well as a common law right. Every man has a natural right to the fruits of his own industry. Labor is deemed to be property, especially within the meaning of constitutional guarantees. Thus, the right to acquire property includes the right to acquire property by labor. The right to earn wages is just as much property and within the protection of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to the Federal Constitution as are earned wages. And since the right to labor is protected by the 14th Amendment and numerous guarantees of state constitutions, one cannot be deprived of such right by arbitrary mandate of the legislature, and it merits legal protection. Such right is likewise embraced by the 5th Amendment to the Federal Constitution. And you have a right to a free labor market. In a general principle, or as a general principle, every member of a community has a right to enjoy a free labor market, to have a free flow of labor for the purpose of carrying on the business in which he or it has chosen to embark. This right is not merely an abstract one. It is one recognized as the basis of a cause of action where there is an unlawful interference therewith. Specifically, laborers have a right to a free and open market in which to dispose of their labor, or a right to a free access to the labor market for the purpose of maintaining or increasing the incorporeal value of their capacity to labor. A laborer has the same right to sell his labor as any other property owner. Let's think about that. You hear that last thing? A laborer has the same right to sell his labor as any other property owner. Now suppose you come along and say to me, hey, Gordon, I want to sell my labor to you. You know what I've got to ask you first of all? Do you own your labor? Do you own your labor? And you'd say, well, of course I own my labor. I've got a right to work. Oh, no, wait a minute. Don't you have a Social Security number? And you'll say, well, yes, of course I have a Social Security number. Then I would say, well, you're in a partnership with the USA Incorporated, and you have to be paid minimum wage. You don't have a right to sell your labor. It's already been sold for you. You have an agent. Your agent requires that you be paid $5.15 an hour. Did you know that, boys and girls? You have an agent. So if I said, gee, I want to pay you $1 an hour in silver coin, I couldn't do that. I can't pay you a dollar an hour. I can't give you one silver dollar for an hour's work. You have to work for $5.15 an hour. Furthermore, don't you know that you can't work without hard hat, steel-toed shoes, and safety goggles, that OSHA and the EPA have to come out from time to time and inspect the workplace? And that's because I, as an employer, I'm going to exploit you. I'm going to put you to work over here in my coal mine and under conditions that you're not smart enough to figure out or unsafe. So we got to have safety inspectors come over here and inspect my coal mine to protect you, because you can't protect yourself because you're not smart enough to. You can't negotiate your own hourly wages. You can't negotiate a contract that has to be done for you. It's done by the Department of Labor and Commerce. It's done by Congress. You can't decide what you should wear to the workplace and what you shouldn't wear to the workplace. That has to be decided for you. It's a guardian-ward relationship. You people with Social Security numbers are incompetent persons, unable to make these decisions for yourself. So they're made for you. They're made by your butler, your cook, and your chauffeur, your public servants, the people that work for you, remember? Your employees. They decide what you will and will not wear to the workplace. and what is a safe or an unsafe work environment, and how much you will and will not work for, and how much percentage off of your labor will be paid over to your public servants, your employees. I mean, it's kind of a crazy mixed up bag, isn't it? Now, I didn't make it this way, boys and girls. I'm just reporting to you that this is the way the game is played. And here's the Social Security Administration with their admissions. Here's American jurisprudence explaining it to you. Here's the Supreme Court of the United States laying it out to you. Here's the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals telling you you can make your own machine gun. You know, as long as you're competent and capable and can make your own, but you can't buy somebody else's in commerce because that's regulated and controlled and you got to pay the tax. And if you don't pay the tax, we're going to put you in jail. So you people that are in jail because you have illegal weapons and you're claiming you've got a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, you fools, you blind, you nitwits. Can't you see that you have no rights under commerce and that you don't have any rights under the Second Amendment to have commercial weapons? You have a right to private weapons. You don't have a right to commercial guns. You know, people don't understand law. They go to public school, and they graduate with honors and with letters after their names, and they're totally incompetent and unable to go out into the real world and make a living, to function out here in the real world without a guardian. And that's why you have to have highway patrolmen out here to govern you on the highways, because you don't know how fast to drive. You don't know how to buckle yourself in unless you got somebody to describe this for you. You're not competent to make those kinds of decisions for yourself. You're not responsible for your accidents that you have out on the highways. You've got to have an insurance company that's responsible for you. It's a guardian ward relationship. Wasn't that just real special? All right, we got to leave it right there, boys and girls. Let me give you a couple of reminders, and we'll take this up again next time. We'll be talking about Social Security, guardian ward relationships, and so on. If you'd like more information about what you're listening to here, just go to the Gordon Law School webpage, georgegordon.org. You can download this program on compact disc. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page at the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.